last time we developed a complete program, which I believe was called Paycheck, a rather boring program. Let's just very quickly review some of the features of this program, for that matter, of every program. First of all, every program begins stylistically with a comment. That's technically not required, obviously, as far as C++, because C++ will ignore the comments. The comments are for us. The comments are for the company style. And almost every company that you work for will establish a particular style of writing comments. This is the style that we're going to use in this class. The next element that you find in every program is what we call preprocessor statements. Preprocessor statements begin with the number sign. The ones that we've seen so far are include. There are other preprocessor statements which at some point in the future we'll look at. The point of a preprocessor statement is that it is processed before the compiler translates your program. In this particular case, it includes these various other files at this point, so that when the compiler actually gets around to translating, it not only translates what you've written, but it actually translates all those other files that contain various information. They're generally what we call library files. Actually, there are what we call header files. Header, H-E-A-D-E-R, we'll talk more about that later on. They describe what's actually in the library. It's not the actual complete library here, but they describe the contents of the library so that your program knows where to find the elements that it needs. In particular, the two library header files that we will always include is the standard C++ library, CSTD, which is C standard lib library, which includes generally standard information that we will just take advantage of throughout all of our programs. And we will include a library called IOStream. The name comes from IO input-output. I'll define what the word stream means a little bit later on. But it contains information that allows our computer to then do all the input and output that the program needs to do. So these two library files will always be included at the top of every one of our programs. The fact that there are blank lines in the programs is stylistic. Okay, just like you might put a blank line between a paragraph, we don't want to double space the entire program. That just makes it longer and more difficult to read. But we want to put blank lines around various sections so that they're easy to find and easier for us as human beings to read them. Now, you'll notice that the two library files here, cstandardlib and IOStream, are surrounded by angle brackets. Okay? The angle bracket is significant, and in C++, it tells the compiler to find these files in their usual location. And later on, when you get sophisticated, you might want to include some of your own files, some of your own libraries, in which case they won't be in the usual location, they'll be elsewhere, and then we won't use angle brackets, we'll happen to use double quotes. But for right now, just as an aside, angle brackets have a very significant meaning. Whenever they're used, they mean find these files in their usual location, and you don't even have to worry about where that is because the compiler knows where to find it because it's in the usual location. The next statement, which is actually the first statement in this program that is actually a C++ statement, is the using namespace standard. And because it's a statement, it ends in a semicolon because all C++ statements end in a semicolon. And in rough or general terms, this basically tells the compiler to use certain standard assumptions later on in the program when you refer to various things, and so that you don't have to get into the dirty details and just can say what you want to say without having to be very specific. A little bit later on, we will look at some of those assumptions and find out what it is, why we would want to use namespace standard. Simply, it's a way of simplifying. You'll notice that our integrated development environment, the COBLOC system, highlights the words using and namespace, as it does various other words like int, float, const, and so on. These are what we call keywords. Okay? Keywords, as we'll see, are like nouns in English. They're words that C++ recognizes as being something special. We're not allowed to use those keywords as names of our own variables. We have a lot of freedom in what we call our variables, but we can't name them using keywords because the compiler has reserved them for its own use. And the case, uppercase, lowercase, is critical. If you were to capitalize the word using or capitalize the word namespace, C++ would no longer recognize them as keywords, and you'd be free to use a variable called capital USING, just like we use any other variable. That wouldn't be a good style, because human beings at 1 o'clock at night would sort of not tend to look at if something capitalized or not. But nevertheless, technically, if you capitalize the words differently, then they're no longer the keywords. They're words that the computer doesn't recognize. And sometimes you will find that. You accidentally capitalize one of these words. Then when you compile it, it says, I don't recognize this variable. It's not a variable, but you've miscapitalized it, so it doesn't recognize the keyword. It's another reason why the color coding is so important, because it clearly makes it easier for us to find the words. In your text, in your workbook, at the end of the chapter, in one of the appendices, there's a complete list of keywords. There's only about 30 of them. It's not a very big list. C++ is a rather small language. And while you don't need to memorize all the keywords, you should glance at them. And obviously, as we learn new words, you'll learn about the particular keywords that you might need. Okay, then we begin with our actual program. And a program is made up of many functions. As I said many times, a function is written to do a very simple task. We try to write functions very small. This is a very small program altogether, and so there's only one function. Every program has to have one and only one function called main. Okay? You'll notice that main is not a keyword. It's not color-coded. Nevertheless, you certainly don't want to use the word main as a variable, because we're using it here to name our functions. A little bit later on, we'll talk about the syntax of naming. In other words, the rules of grammar. How can you choose a variable name? What's legal? What's not legal? We'll get to that a little bit later. In any event, every function begins, okay, with what we call a function header, which is this first line here, followed by, in braces, matching braces, the function body. So a function consists of a header followed by a body. A body is always surrounded by squiggly braces. Okay? By squiggly braces. We'll see other uses for squiggly braces later on, but they encircle a group of statements that are meant to be treated as a unit. In this case, the body of this function. Every function has the word, has its name, in this case, main, followed by parentheses. Now, you may notice that some of the handouts, I've put things into the parentheses. At this point, you can take all those things out. They really mean nothing to us right now. Main doesn't need anything in the parentheses. Some functions will put things in the parentheses. Some functions will not put things in parentheses. We'll get into that much later on. In any event, even if there's nothing in the parentheses, we need to put the parentheses there, because that's how the system knows that this is a function. A function always consists of a name that you choose, in this case main, followed by parentheses. That's how it recognizes it. It's not a variable, for example. It's a function header. Now, the function has to be described, and in this case, all of our main functions will always be described as an int. And I'll talk about why an integer as opposed to a float or something else, but it is standard that main starts int, main, open parentheses, close parentheses. For now, that's all we need. Every main will always look just like that. Now we move to the body of a function. The body of a function has two parts. The first part is the declaration, which is, in this case, the first two statements that I have here, followed by, all the way till down here, statements. The purpose of the declaration is to set aside room in the computer's memory for the boxes that we drew on the board last time. This is where we create the variables. What we're really doing here is simply telling the computer, set aside sufficient space in the computer for hours, rate, net, gross, and tax. And we're also describing to the computer how much space it needs to set aside depending on what it is that we're putting into those variables. So we're telling the computer to set aside 1, 2, 3, hours, rate, net, and gross, 4 variables, enough space to hold a number with a decimal point, a real number as opposed to an integer. Okay, we'll describe all the different types that are possible throughout the semester. And then we're also telling the computer to set aside enough space to hold a variable called tax. But this time we're also telling the computer to, when you create the space, stick the number 25 into that space and don't allow the program later on to change that value. So tax is a variable, except it doesn't vary. Okay? It's a constant variable. And we're initializing it to the value 25.00. Okay? The next statement, now we begin with statements. Statements all end with semicolons, and there are many different types of statements. This is where we tell the computer to do something. These are what in English you would call imperative statements. They're commands. They're not equations that say a statement of fact, pi equals some value, or area of a circle equals, you know, pi r squared. It's not a statement of fact. It's a statement saying, do something. In order, follow this command. The particular command, see out, followed by those two angle brackets, is an example of what we call an output statement. Okay? Basically what this says, and we'll spend a lot of time later on talking about this statement, analyzing in detail, is take the stuff that's on the right of those two angle brackets, which in this case is something in quotes, and send it, look at the direction of the arrow, send it to see out. What is see out? For right now, we will simply think of it as the screen. Send it to the screen. Send whatever it is on the right to the screen. Okay? See out is what we call an output stream. And right now, the output stream, think of a stream of water being poured out of a pipe, is associated with the console, which is the screen. Later on, we'll learn how to redirect that to some other location. Maybe we'll want the results not to go to the screen, but to go to a file that you might save on your disk, which you then later on can print neatly and nicely. Okay, but for now, we're associating C out with the console. That's done automatically for us behind the scenes. That's actually what's done in IOStream. Okay? The next statement is an example of an input statement. The reverse. The arrows are directed, are in the reverse direction. And that says, take whatever you find in C in, which again for now is associated with the keyboard. So whatever it finds in the keyboard, and ship it in, or push it into, hours and rate. In this case, it will expect to find 2 values there, and it will wait until you give it 2 values. If you give it only 1 value, it'll continue to wait. It'll wait until you satisfy it, until you give it 2 values. The first value, whatever it is being put into hours, and the second one, the next thing it finds, is going to go into rate. It's your responsibility at this point to make sure that they're compatible. It's expecting, CN really doesn't know anything. Okay, it's like a garden hose. Whatever you stick through that garden hose, that's what's going to come out. But you've told it to stick the first thing into something called hours, and the second thing into something called rate. And we've described hours and rate as numbers, 2 numbers. If you were to sit at the keyboard and type in a word, computer would try as best as it could to follow your instructions, and gibberish would come out. Because clearly it makes no sense to take a word, which is made up of many characters, and put them into something that's supposed to be that's expecting a number. Makes no sense. And for now we'll behave ourselves, and whenever it expects two numbers, we'll put in two numbers. Yes?
What if you utter such a variable? Let's say A is a second word and it thinks that...
Well, let's not talk about what if. Let's do it right. Let's first get a handle of what happens correctly, when you do it correctly. And as we get more sophisticated, we'll start looking at the assumptions that it's making and how it interprets errors. And sometimes we might deliberately take advantage of those errors, and sometimes we'll just have to make sure that errors don't occur. We know that when we tell someone to do something, they're going to deliberately try to do something different. Right? Every 12-year-old, every time you go up to a cash machine in a bank, it gives you instructions of what to put in. And everyone goes up there and tries to put in other things, hoping that maybe a slot machine will open up and lots of money will pour out. Clearly the bank has to spend a lot of time making sure that when people put things in, it only accepts correct values. Okay, we're not doing that here. We're assuming that when we ask for two numbers, the person who's using our program will give it two numbers. If they don't, all bets are off. Later on, we'll want to make sure to enforce that. We have no idea yet how to do that, but that'll be advanced. Then we have some statements that are what we call assignment statements that are read from right to left, and they tell the computer to take whatever is stored in the box that you called rate, multiply it by whatever you call hours, and put it into gross. Gross, rate, and hours are called variables. The asterisk and the minus sign are called operators. They're like verbs. Okay? Variables are like nouns. Operators are like verbs. The other operators that you see here are the input operator and the output operator. Those are also operators. They cause something to happen. They're verbs, they're actions. So we, in this case, take the rate times the hours and put in the gross. And unlike algebra, you must put in the multiplication operator. You simply can't use parentheses and assume, like 3x, that there is a multiplication there. You would have to say 3 asterisk x. Whether you put blanks around the times or the minus, or don't put blanks, is a matter of style, makes it a matter of what's easier to read. I think it makes it much easier to read if you put a blank around them. C++ does not care about blanks. Okay, so whether you put the blanks in, doesn't put the blanks in, it's all fine. And then we have some more output statements. In particular, I want to just point out that at the end of this output, we're sending to C out three things. A string of characters, that's in double quotes, and IDE recognizes that by color coding it appropriately. If you were to leave the last double quote off, everything else would be the same color. You right away would know, oops, I must have left out a double quote, because it keeps on going until it finds a matching double quote, which would be the one down here. Would match this one if you left that one out. So color coding would all be off. That helps you. So the first thing we're sending out the pipe into C out is a string. Strings are always in double quotes, and they consist of a string of characters. And the computer doesn't bother paying attention to what's in that. Whatever you put there, that's what it sends out in any language with any spelling. The next thing that you see is a variable that is not in double quotes. In that case, it doesn't print out G-R-O-S-S, but rather it sends through the pipe the contents of whatever happens to be in that box, in that variable. And then we send it E-N-D-L, which simply is an instruction to go to the next line. It's like a carriage return when you type. It means move to the next line. Now, E-N-D-L, from the color coding, you see is a variable, isn't it? See, it's the same color coding as the word gross and net. Yet it's a variable that we have never defined. How can we do that? Well, it has been defined. It's defined in the standard library and in IOS, both of them. Okay? So it's been defined for us. So it helps us. It saves us the problem of defining them. Finally, because when we tell the computer to send something to the console, as soon as the computer has followed your instructions, it closes the console. In a blink of an eye, it will send the results to the screen, and the screen will disappear. well, that doesn't give you much of a chance to read what it says there, or to print it out. And therefore, we want to give the computer an instruction that simply says, pause, or wait until the human being hits a key, and then you can close and disappear. So the message, system pause, is simply an instruction to the system. Now, what system are we talking about here? Who's the system? Who's in charge of that opening that window, or any windows? The operating system. In this case, our program is talking to Windows and saying to Windows, you know that window, that console that you opened? Don't close it. Leave it open and print the message, press any key to continue. And only when the person finally presses the key, then you may close that window, then you're done. Okay? So you can see that your program can not only talk to the console, which is what all the printing, the CIOT does, but we can actually interact with the operating system itself. And so we'll end all of our programs that way, because in every case, we want the console to stay open to give you a chance to see what it says. And then the function returns, which basically says, school's out, go home. Okay, we're done. Okay? The return of a function sends you back to where you came from. Now, the question is, where did you come from in this case? The operating system. So we'll go back to the operating system, and once again, we'll sit there waiting for whatever else you want to do. You finish working, now play a game, or whatever. Return means simply go home. Now, when we go home, we'd like to be able to tell our parents that we had a good day or a bad day. Something was successful or was unsuccessful. Since by the time it gets to line 26, everything has worked out okay, then we want to tell the operating system, I finished and I was successful. That's the zero. Zero means success, and any other number is some kind of error code. Okay? And actually, when you run the program, so there's the console, and we put in two numbers, as expected. So let's say 23 and 78. Oops, that's one number. That would be considered one number because a blank, one or more blanks, could use to show that this is two numbers. Press any key to continue. Done. Okay. At this point, I say, it says process return zero. That's that zero, which basically tells the operating system all went well. And at this point, okay, you'll notice process terminated with a status of zero. Now, we don't do anything with that zero. We just look at it and say, hooray. Okay? When you get really sophisticated, you'll learn how to take advantage of that, of making use of the fact that we told someone that we were having a good day, that we finished. Or maybe we had a bad day, and there'll be other codes that we might want to send back. But for now, our first program, return zero, will be the way main will always end, because we're writing programs that when we get this far, if we got this far, then we're done. And so we said, fine, we're done. Go home. Everything went well. That's the zero. Now, because we're returning a zero, what kind of a number is a zero? Is it a number, a real number, or an integer? It's an integer, right? It's got no decimal point. Zero. It's not 0.0. It's not 0.01. It's an integer. Because the main returns an integer, that's why we describe main here as an int. Just as we describe hours, rate, net, and gross as being floats, since main is going to eventually return a number like 0, 1, 2, 3, whole numbers, which will be codes for success or failure, error codes we call them. Even when there's no error, we call them an error code. 0 is an error code, which means that everything was fine. It's like saying, you know, your grade is 100. So here, the grade is a 0. I guess it's backwards. So we describe that as an int. Main will always be an int, since we will always return an integer at the end of it. Other functions may not be ints. We may have a function that calculates the square root. That wouldn't be an int function. That returns a float, or, as we'll see, a double, perhaps. Okay? So we have functions that can return anything. But main, since it's designed to return to the operating system an integer, all our mains will always be int. In other words, our first line will always be that way. So that is a summary a general program, and of course we'll be writing some more programs and talking more specifically about the syntax or the rules of grammar. Now, technically, do we need this statement over here, line 16? Will the program work without if I leave line 16 out? Yes. The purpose of line 16 is to communicate to the human being who's going to sit in front of the screen what's expected at the next point. But that really, other than that, it really serves no purpose. There are two types of programs that people write. The first is what we call an interactive program. An interactive program is a program that's designed to have a dialogue with a user. You put in some values, it gives you back an answer. The computer asks you a question, you call up, you give the phone operator the name and the address that you want, she gives you back the phone number. That's interaction. However, another type of program, suppose I have a program that prints out all the transcripts of students at the end of every semester. Do we want someone sitting at the computer and saying one at a time, enter a number, print it out, enter a number, print it out? No. What we'd like to do is tell the computer, go get all the transcripts, print them all out, I'm going out for coffee, when I come back it'll all be done. Okay? Or if you had to process a payroll for an entire company. Okay? What you basically want the computer to do is to read the information that's stored on each person who works, each employee, calculate all their taxes, produce their checks, do whatever it has to do, print them all out, maybe even into envelopes, and you'll be out in coffee having coffee. That's called a batch, B-A-T-C-H job, as opposed to an interactive program. Batch program versus interactive programs. Now, right now, this is an interactive program, the one that we wrote. It's a good habit, since a program is designed to interact with a human being, to always precede every input statement with an output statement, what we call a prompt, to ask the user what to do. Because there's a user sitting there. User can't read minds. Not yet, anyway. But a batch job, okay, if we wrote this program to process hundreds of payrolls, and there was nobody sitting here, and I just had all the information ready in the computer, then of course there'd be no purpose to the statement, because who am I talking to? The person went out for coffee. Okay? So the rule generally is that if you write an interactive program, as we are doing at least at first, there's no point in if you're doing an interactive program, then you always want to precede every input statement by an output statement, or what we call a prompt, to the user. On the other hand, when we design our program to process massive amounts of data unattended in batch mode, then we don't bother putting prompts because we're not talking to anybody. So let's begin developing another program. Now this one will be a little bit more complicated. So what I want to do is to write a C++ program which calculates the age of many individuals, many people, given their birth month and birth year. Suppose what I want to do, in rough terms, is do a statistical study. I want to find out what the average age of all the students in the class is. So what do? I hand each of you out a sheet of paper, and of course I ask you to write on the sheet of paper the month and the year that you are born. Okay? Then I collect all those papers, okay? And I'm going to want the computer to give me your age. We'll talk about average later on. Right now, we just wanted to calculate your age. Okay. In other words, I wanted to say something like, you are 19.3 years old. You're 20.7 years old. For each person. Okay. What other information might we need besides your date of birth? In other words, your month and the year that you were born in. You need to know the current year and the current month. Right? Now, could get that information out of the computer, since the computer has a calendar, a date built into it. But at this point, I don't want to do that. That's too complicated right now. So I'm going to make a little bit change. What you're going to do is you're going to give me, let's say you were born on November 5th of 1980. Okay? You will put 11-1980. Remember, I don't care about the day. I'm only talking about giving the year and the birth and the month. And you, on the same sheet of paper, put in, I guess today is 02-208. And the next person would put on their paper, they're born in January 1982. Again, they'll put 02-2008. And maybe the next person will put, they're born in 5-1990, 02-2008. So each person will submit to me a piece of paper, which I'll then make a stack of, hold those papers in front of me, and then go to the computer and say, for each person, print out their age. That's what we want to accomplish. Okay? So I get a stack of papers. Here they are. Each paper has four numbers on it, which I then want to sit in front of the computer and put those numbers in and have the computer print out the age for each of those people. Okay. Once again, our friendly Martian has just landed and is awaiting your command. What's the first thing you're going to tell the Martian to do? Start. Excellent. Okay. What are you going to tell the Martian to do next? A box, a bubble. Excellent. So I'm going to create some bubbles. And you already told me month and year. Do you mean to hold today's month or the person's birth month?
Boxes.
Yeah, I need four boxes. So what do you mean these two to be? So then let's give it a little different name. Let's just call it birth month and birth year. Oops, birth year. Okay? For now, I'm just writing them out like this. Later on, I'll show you how to do it nicely and stylistically. And then you need two more boxes, you're correct. And I'm going to call that box, how about month? This, I could call it current month, I'm getting tired writing. Okay? And the other one we'll call year. Okay? Excellent. So we have four boxes. Do we need any other boxes? Maybe we do. Maybe not. We'll figure it out later on. So now that we've done that, what do we want to tell the Martian to do? I would not write what I'm doing down right this minute, because we're going to have to go through several iterations until you get it right. And I'm going to deliberately do it that way. Okay, so what do I want next? Tell the Martian to do something. Boxes are created. What should I do next? I don't have anything to subtract yet. The boxes are empty. So you're jumping ahead one step. So what? Well, I think Martian doesn't know what that is. Just, you want to input four numbers into each of those boxes, right? We want to take the first number it finds and put it into birth month, the second number it finds and put it into birth year, the third number it finds to put it into month, and the fourth number it finds to put it into year, right? That's what we want to do. Just, it doesn't reckon, remember, Martian does not know what those numbers mean. You do, but it doesn't know what they mean. So we just tell them to pick up four numbers and stick them into the boxes in the order that we tell the computer to do it. Good. So that's an input statement. That's fine. That's excellent. And I will simply do that like this, like a big box. And in the order that I expect to find the numbers, it was birth month, birth year, month, and year. So having done that, the Martian now has done what you've told it to do, And this is the situation that you now see, that you now have. Good. Now what do we want to do? Yes? Make what?
Could it make lists?
Lists of what? For right now, until about a month from now, a box can hold one value at a time. But that's a good question because we'll get to it later on. But right now, one thing. So what do I want to do next? This is the situation. The Martian did what you told it to do. It's waiting. Let's get it working right now. Simple. And then we will go through several iterations making this more efficient. For right now, we've got four boxes. That was good. Stick four numbers into them. Done it. What's next? Subtract the birth year box from the year box. Go ahead. Oh, we need another box, huh? Okay. What do you want to call that box? That's a very good name for the box. Good. So let me put that other box up there. And what you're trying to tell me is to calculate the age from this information. But you only told me part of the calculation. It's a little bit more complicated than that. Because let's say somebody has a birthday, now it's 2008. But let's say their birthday is in April, not in February. So they haven't yet gotten to their birthday. Your method simply makes them a year older than they really are. Right? So it's a little more complicated. Instead of us wasting time on figuring out the formula, let me just give it to you, and you can verify this with your own age right now, just to make sure that it's correct. The next thing you want to tell the Martian to do is to take the year minus the birth year, as you correctly said, but you want to add to that the month minus the birth month divided by 12. And you want to stick that into age. Okay? The year minus the birth year, that was correct, plus the month minus the birth month divided by 12. Everybody do it with their own age for a moment. Sit there and just take a minute to do this arithmetic and see if it's not correct. If it is correct, it is correct. But verify with your own age. Take your own year minus birth year. Just do it on paper, the arithmetic. And you may use calculators for this. Not later on, but for now you can use calculators. Is it right? Yeah, but if your birthday was 2 days ago, happy birthday, then we're only considering the month, not the day, right? But as you can see, if you haven't had your birthday yet this year, then this number becomes a negative number. And subtracts a fraction from how old you are, so you're a year point something younger. Let's do it with this one. With someone with the calculator. Let's take the what it says to do. It says to take the year, take 2008 minus 1980 plus 02 minus 11 divided by 12, which is a negative number, obviously. And what does one get? Come on, use parentheses or whatever. You got to put my calculator to do this. How much?
No, I have 27.25. Right?
27.25, is that what you get to? You could be. You could be right also.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, I need a calculator to do this. Okay. Did you get it to write the same answer?
I need a calculator, yeah.
Well, let's do it. I want to make sure that he's got the right answer. I want everyone to do it, actually. So, do me a favor. Several people do the arithmetic here. 27.25. Good. I want people to believe it. Okay. In any event, I assume you just all did this arithmetic, or you're still pressing the buttons, and after doing that, it puts the 27.25 into this box. Excellent. So we've done. The Martian has done what we've told it to do. Okay. Now what? What's your next command to the Martian? What's the next thing you want to tell the Martian to do? What you see has been done on that board. What's your next thing? What do you want me to do now? Any ideas? Have we finished? Well, I'm sorry, what? We're finished? Wait a minute. First of all, do you know the answer yet? It's locked up in the Martian's head. I know a secret, I'm not telling. What have you not told the Martian to do?
To print
it out. Remember, the Martians, all you've done so far is told it to put a number in a box. It's in the box. That's good. Big deal. Well, it doesn't do you any good. Makes the Martian happy, but doesn't make you happy. Okay? So we need to tell the Martian to print the result, which we can easily do using an output. And we'll simply say, the age is, and then age. So we'll print the message on the screen. The age is 27.25. Are we happy? Everybody happy? This is a feel-good class. You have to be happy. Okay, so what do we do next? Is the Martian done? Are we finished? Have you done everything you're supposed to do? I send my kids to clean up the room. They put one piece of clothing in the hamper. They say they're done. Are they done? Is Martian done? Are we done? What do we need to do next? Do it again. Very good. Because the Martian has done, taken care of this, 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 and this. And now you say, do it again. Excellent. So I'll show you how to do it again. I'll just draw a line from here to here. With an arrow. A loop. Follow the arrow. Or if you're in the Wizard of Oz, follow the yellow brick road. And do it again. So the Martian now says, okay, get the next four numbers. Okay, the next four numbers in the order. 01, cross that out, because we can only put one number in a box. So when we put a new number in, it crosses out the old, it erases the old number, replaces it. Puts in 1982. Puts in the next month, 02. Puts in 2008, okay? Then it does this calculation and sticks that into age. So we get some new number in here. I won't bother you with the calculators, but whatever it is, it's 2 years or so younger, so it's maybe 25, blah, blah, blah. Okay? Prints out the result, and you told me to do it again. So again, I start at the top, take the, but that took care of these four. Take the 05. Take the 1990. Take the 02. Take the 2008. And calculate a new age. I don't know, this guy is 18 something, whatever. Okay? So far, so good? And then what did you tell the Martian to do after printing out age, the age 18? What did you tell the Martian to do? But that's not what you told the Martian to do. What did you tell the Martian to do there? Do it again. So the Martian comes back to the board. These are not there anymore. And it's trying to get four numbers, which you're not providing. And it gets very angry at you, blows up the spaceship, and disappears. Not a happy situation. I think you can see there's a problem just by looking at that picture. A flowchart has to start somewhere and has to end at a stop or an end somewhere. This leads to a very frustrated Martian. It's what we call an infinite loop. It goes round and round and round. There's no way out. This is like telling your child, go upstairs, fill up the bathtub. And that's all you tell the child to do. What's the next thing that happens? There's a flood all over the floor. Because you never told the child under what conditions and how and if and to turn off the water. We've got a problem. Does everyone appreciate the problem? What might be a solution? Have a code to tell it when to stop. So, like, you mean put the word stop at the bottom? Maybe a word like after the three numbers, put the word stop? Like what? Well, let's see. Let's say I rewrite that so that I say when you get to the word stop, you should stop. Here's the problem. The Martian is expecting to... very good. The Martian is expecting to get four numbers. And as soon as you put in the word stop, it chokes all over the stop. And it's got to go, you know, to the hospital because it can't process the word stop. It was expecting four numbers. And again, we're back to the same problem. So what I think you're trying to do is maybe I should put in at the very end. Now I could maybe do a different thing. Maybe I could count how many I have and tell the Martian, do it three times. Do it ahead of time. But if I had 10,000 sheets of paper, do I really want to count them ahead of time? No, I want to stick all those pieces of paper without having to count them. So I don't know how many I have ahead of time. That's why it's an unknown number of people. That's what I think what the assignment said. I have no idea how many people I have. I don't want to count it ahead of time. So, good clue. Let's put some numbers in that will signal the Martian that we're done. Well, it's got to be some numbers that can't possibly be legitimate values. There've got to be numbers, because we're expecting four numbers. What kind of number could not possibly be legitimate? Let's say four zeros. I've got to give it four zeros, right? Because it's expecting four numbers. I can give it four negative numbers if I want. Okay, I can give it four numbers that are that start with above 12. Something impossible. Some fake data. Okay? Let's rewrite this slightly. So I'm going to erase this. And I'm going to stack the deck by putting as many numbers as I have, I'll just put four zeros at the end. Or any four numbers. Numbers, because they have to be numbers, because we're expecting three numbers, but numbers that can't be legitimate in our problem. So now what do I want to tell them? Let's back up. Let's see if we can figure out what we need to do. We start. Good. We read four numbers. 11, 1980, 02, 2008. What do we want to do now? I read the first set of numbers. What do I want to do now? Should I calculate the age at this point? For those four numbers? Exactly. Let's check to see. Are the numbers you picked up zeros? If that's true, what do we want it to do? If the numbers we wanted that we picked up now were zeros, what do we want to do? End it. That's like telling the kid, fill up the bathtub. We're also telling them, when the water gets to such and such a spot, not right away, but when the water gets to such a spot, turn off the water. So I need to make a decision. The decision has to be, was the numbers zeros or not? True, false. If they're zeros, I'm going to stop. If they're not zero, then I can calculate the age, print out the results, take the next one. Okay? Now, do I need to check if all the numbers are zeros? No, as long as one of them is zero, because none of them could be zero. So, as long as I have to give it four zeros because it's expecting four numbers, but I only have to look at one of them to see if it's zero. If it's zero, it means stop. So I need to make a decision. All decisions are true false. They can have two values only, not maybes, true or false. And we use a diamond and we state a fact. The fact I'm going to put in is, I'm going to say, is the month greater than zero? No, not the month, the birth month. Is the birth month greater than zero? Now, this is not a question, it's a fact. Birth month greater than zero. Now, for the first set of numbers, is it true? Is birth month greater than zero? For the second set, is it true? For the third set, is it true? For the fourth set, is it true? No. In other words, there's a true and a false. All decisions have two ways out. Not a third way, only two ways. It's either true or false. Can have maybes. Okay, if it's false, what do we want to do? You told me right away what you wanted to do. Stop. If it's true, then we put what we had before. The age is assigned the value of, and you can figure out the rest of it. Then do what? What comes next? The print, right? And then do what? Go back. Here. Do we have a way out now? Is there an infinite loop anymore? No, because now Yes, we'll be going around and around and around, but eventually we'll be out. We read in first a set of numbers, check to see if it's time to stop. If it is, we stop. If not, we continue. Read in another set of numbers, continue, check. Another way of saying this is that we're going to do this loop over and over again while the birth month is greater than zero. As soon as the birth month is not greater than zero, we're going to stop. Visually now, do we have an infinite loop anymore? Is there a way of getting from start to stop? What would happen if someone by mistake put in zeros over here? What would happen? It would stop the program after only doing the first two values. Right? Okay. Now, this method is called what we call the trailer method. The trailer method, called a trailer because like a trailer behind a car, it's the last thing, or a caboose at the end of a train, okay, signals with false data when it is time to stop. So we don't need to know how many values there are. When we hit the trailer, okay, we will use that to change our direction. The actual four zeros that we put here are called flags. Like in a train, where there's the person that raises a train, or in a race, in a NASCAR race. The flag goes up, you do one thing, the flag goes down, you do something else. The same thing here. The zeros serve as a flag, as a signal, as when it's time to get out of the loop and to stop. So, do we have a good logic here? Does this program work? It should, I hope. Now, it may not be the most efficient program in the world, but, among other things, we have to type the date over and over and over and over again, as opposed to writing it maybe once, and the date's not going to change today. We'll figure that out later on. But at least it works. Not the best way, but it works. So we have our algorithm. We have our flowchart. We have our method. We can trace it by hand, as I did over there. And we now know that our method will work. So what's the next step? The Martian's gone home. Now, practically, what's the next step? Well, compile what? I haven't written anything. Can we compile a flowchart? There's a step beforehand. I have to take that flowchart and write it in C. C++. Okay? I need to write it. Once I write it, I can compile it, and we can run. So are we ready to now to write this program? Yeah. So, let's write it together. Now, instead of having me to type the whole program in from scratch, let me just close this. Let me find the place that I've done this before. And you have a copy of it. And it is called Birthdays. And there are several versions of this, because we're going to make better and better versions. But first, let's take the simplest version that works. If you look at your handout, you have that called Birthdays. Everybody have a copy of that in front of them? Everybody with me? I want to make sure everyone has it. Everyone not have a handout? Everyone has a handout, right? Okay. Let's start from the beginning. Okay? So we're going to, what we need to do is take this picture, turn it into words. So we're up here. Okay? So we need to do some of the preparatory stuff first. So we type in our comment. Birthdays, copyright, whatever, author is us, the date, a description, should be a paragraph, okay? In this description you might mention any special techniques that we're using, the trailer method, okay? Use the trailer method to signal in. You can write the whole story there. From an assignment that I give you, you might take the assignment, actually paraphrase it, and type it in. Okay, so we got our comment out of the way, and now we have our include, they're both there. This is almost like doing things like out of a box. Just type them in. Then we have our using namespace standard, no different. Then we have our int, main, and I will, just to show that you don't really need this stuff in here, take this stuff out. Okay? Now we have our brace and our ending brace. Okay? Oops, down there. Why are you jumping to there? I don't want you to do that. There you go. That brace matches that brace. See, they're both highlighted for us. In fact, the lines on the side link them up for us to make it easier for us to read when we have long programs. Okay. What's the first thing we do in the body of the function? Remember, I just told you we started with discussion. The first thing in the body is the decla. We have to create the boxes. How many boxes did we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Birth month, birth year, age, month and year. And they're all going to hold decimal points, so I call them float. Yeah? Constant? Okay. Because then tomorrow it won't work right, and the day afterwards it won't work right. It only worked right for two. For this month, right. And certainly the person who you're selling this program to doesn't know anything about C++ and doesn't know how to go in there and change it. They don't have the compiler anyway. So for now, this is the way we did it. We'll make improvements. We will make improvements. There are, I think, 4 versions of this program on your sheets, each one getting better and better. Don't look at them now. It'll just confuse you. So that's the first line. We create the empty variables. We give them names. Here's a convention for naming variables, what we will always use in this class. Variables will always begin with lowercase letters. Always. Except for constants, which are completely capitalized. But variables will always begin with lowercase letters. In fact, the rule for variables is that they must start with a letter. And then they can contain any number of characters that are either letters or numbers. Okay? But they can't have blanks in them, they can't have punctuation marks in them. A second rule of convention that we're going to write is that when we have a variable that has more than one word in it, for description purposes, I will start it with a little letter, and as you can see, I will capitalize each successive word. So it's birth month, birth year, current month, current year. Now I'm not using the words month and year because I was lazy to write it in my hand, I was getting tired. When I write a program, I'm more concerned with making it clear than how my hand falls off from typing. So I will always yell at you if you don't write meaningful variables. If you use variables like X and Y and Z, I'll scream. Okay? Variables need to have names that make sense to me and you. Okay? If you'd rather do this in French, I don't know how to say birth month in French, but say it in French. Okay? But you have to use meaningful variables. So that's the rule. We'll always start our variables with lowercase letters, and when they look like multiple words, we'll start each word with a capital. We can't put blanks inside, because that is not allowed. We'll consider that to be 2 variables, not 1. Okay. Now I'm going to skip the next line. Line 19 for right now, ignore. So we've just done this. Now we're ready to do this. Is this an interactive program? Did I design this to be interactive? Yes, so before every input statement, I'm going to put a bunch of output statements. Please enter your birth month, birth year, as well as the current month, followed by the current year. Enter 4 zeros to stop. I better tell the person sitting down how to stop the program, otherwise they'll be very frustrated too. They won't know to put in 4 zeros. Because you're not the one using the program, you're designing for someone else. So we have a nice set of instructions that we give the user. And then we do the input. That's this statement. Line 24 is this statement right here. Now what did we do right after that statement? We now began the loop. The loop doesn't begin with this statement. Okay? The actual loop begins here. This is where it starts. This is the beginning of the loop. And it says, I want to continue doing this while the birth month is greater than 0. What do I want to do while the birth month is greater than 0? Get an age, print it, get the next value. While the birth month is greater than 0. Get the age, print it, get the next value. Okay. So here is our new statement. Again, we'll describe this much later. It's a first example of a loop. It's called a while loop. And the while loop has the following format. It starts with the word while, which is a keyword, means something. In parentheses, there's something we call a condition. A condition can have only 2 results, true or false. Some of you may have taken logic courses in high school. And there's something called Boolean algebra. Boolean algebra or logic. Things true or false values. We'll have a whole week talking about Boolean algebra. That's the key here. How to make conditions that are either true or false. But in this case, the condition is simple. Birth month greater than zero. That's either true or false. If it's true, we will enter the loop. If it's true, we'll enter the loop. If it's false, we drop out of the loop. Now, where is the loop? Again, we have two braces, another set of two braces. See them? A loop has a header and a body, just like a function does. A header, in this case, the header is while birth month is greater than zero, and the body is everything that's in the braces. So you see that braces are used whenever we need, squiggly braces are used whenever we need a body. Okay? And what it will do is it will do the stuff in that over and over and over again as long as birth month is greater than zero. When birth month is not greater than zero, it'll drop out of the bottom of the loop and do the rest of the stuff, which is to stop. Okay? Now, this is a nice size loop, and loops can be much bigger. In this case, it all fits on one screen. But for the reader, sometimes you have so many braces, you don't know which brace belongs to which brace. When you read this, okay? So what I'd like to do is to add comments. Now, we've seen one type of comment which starts with a slash star and ends with a star slash. Everything in between that is ignored. There's another type of comment, a one-line comment, and that is a slash slash. Anything following a slash slash is ignored just till the end of that line. So when you want to write a one-line comment, because you want to make some point to me or to yourself to remember, then you use slash slash to write whatever you want. So we'll get into the habit of putting these type of comments at the end of loops. In fact, it might not be a bad idea to add a comment here, end main. So that when someone reads this, they know that this brace is the end of the main, and this brace is the end of the loop. End of, maybe we even want to be more specific, while loop. Because there'll be other loops later on. We don't actually need the word of in there. So we will write such things as end while. And in fact, we don't even need the word loop in there, because everyone knows what a while is, and therefore this is what's traditionally done. People write end while, end main. No, they don't need to write the end of or end more details. Just a stylistic thing. Not required because it's a comment. So we have a loop here. So let's look at the loop. While birth month is greater than zero, that was this statement. If it's true, we did the age. That's line 26. Please skip line 28 for a moment. Print out the age. That's this box. And then come back around, ask for the next set of numbers, and read in the next four numbers. Come around the loop and see, is it time to stop yet? Do you notice that I repeated this? This is repeated? Why did it have to be? Can you see why I must repeat this over here? Look at the logic. The first time, I have to read the first set of numbers before I can figure this out. Once I enter the loop, do I ever get back to this point? No, the loop sends me back to here. So after calculating and printing out the age, I gotta get the next set, come back to here. I can never get back to here. This is outside the loop. This is before the loop began. So we'll see there's a general form when you use a while loop. You'll get your first set of values, you'll enter the loop, process those values, and then get the next set at the bottom of the loop, and then repeat around and around and around. Okay? Now, I know I skipped two statements here. Okay? The statement C out dot set F, and the statement C out dot precision. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, we basically understand the program. Okay? And if I temporarily ignore these statements. How can I temporarily ignore when things don't work right? I'm not sure. Well, let's make them, turn them into comments. Put a comment here, and put a comment here. That effectively ignores, those statements are not there anymore. So you don't know about them, so I took them out. That's as if I've deleted them. Well, let's run this program. Let's build it. Okay? Done. Zero errors, zero warning, always nice to see. Let's run it. Okay. Please enter your birth month, birth year, as well as, that is coming from these statements over here. So we're going to put in 11-1980. Now we'll see if you got it right before. 2-2008. And it prints out 4. 1E1 and 2E03. Your age is 3 plus 001. Now what the heck is going on here? Okay, what the heck is going on? So let me put those statements back in. So let me put 4 zeros to stop. Okay. Let's put those statements back in. Put this back in. Let's put this back in. Oh, and I know why. And I see. Okay, hold on a minute. I forgot. Well, let me take them out again. We'll figure this out. Let me take this one out also. I left that one in by accident. That's why things were screwed up. Okay. I took out every case of a statement that had precision or that set F that we never learned about. Let's compile and run it again. This time it'll work fine. Okay, so now we have 11-1980 to 2008. It says for 11 and 1980, your age is 27.25. Okay? Let's put in the next set of values. Was that now we've where are we now in the program? We're down here now. Okay? Okay. Enter 4 zeros to stop. We're not ready yet, so let's put in, I'm gonna take the next set of data. 5-1990 to 2008. And you get 5-1990, your age is 17.75. Okay? And now, again, at the bottom of the loop, put in 4 zeros. Press enter key to continue. We're done. Okay? Now, what were those mysterious statements that I had before? Notice that it calculated it out to how many places? 2 places. If it would have had, that's because it worked out exactly to 0.25. If it would have worked out to 0.333333, it would have printed it out to 0.333333. Ugly. Let's say you want to tell the computer not how many places to calculate it to, but how many places to round it off to when it prints out the answer. Okay? In order to do that, I introduce a cookbook statement for now. You just do this exactly. First, you say this mysterious line, cout.setf, blah, blah, blah. You just include that up on top of the program before you start. And then, right before you print something, you tell me how many places you want it to print it to. So things like the age, we want it to print out to how many places? Pick a number. 1, let's say. Let's say we land it off to 1 place. So let me take this line out and make that precision 1. See out that precision 1. All that statement says is round it off to 1 place. Okay? So let's run the program now. Let's run it. So let me put in 11-1980. Let's put in 2-2008. Okay, for 11 and 1980, your age is 27.25. What the heck just happened? Why didn't it round it off? Did I not compile the program? I didn't compile the program, see? If you don't compile the program, what is it running? The version that you compiled, but how do I know I didn't compile the program? Well, among other things, I didn't get the right answer. And secondly, notice that the star is still here. If I would have compiled it, it would have automatically saved the new version. And so let's compile it, build it, and run again. Now, let's just build and run. Okay, compiling it again. This time, let's run it. Okay, so now it's 11-1980 to 2008. Okay, we're getting there. for 11.00000 and 1980.0000, your age is 27.3. Okay, did the age round off nicely? Yeah, one place. That's what I wanted. But you see, once I start telling the computer to specify a precision, if I don't do it, it'll show me. That's why, let's put in four zeros now and stop. Okay. If I now put in C out precision zero before the birth month and birth year get printed out, it'll print those with no decimal places, as is appropriate, and the age will be calculated to round it off to one place. So when I recompile and run it again, this time, let's run it 11-1980-2-2008. Beautiful. For 11 and 1980, your age is 27.3. Let's put in 5-1990-2-2008. Okay, enter four zeros to stop, and it prints out 5-17.8. Let me do something else. Let me just show you variation. Suppose I type in, let's take this other set of data that I left out. 1-1980. You think that makes a difference to the Martian? No. Let's say I hit enter now. I only gave it two numbers. What's it doing? It's still waiting for two more. You told it to wait for four. So I can put in now 2. And I really wanted to be weird. I can put the next number in on the next line. And only then will it go on. Because you told it four numbers, it does not care whether the numbers are four numbers on one line, one number per line, one number separated out by a lot of spaces. Makes no difference. It wants four numbers. It'll throw a temper tantrum until it gives you four numbers. Like a three-year-old. It won't go until you give it what you promised it. Four numbers, then it'll move. Okay? Now I'll put in four zeros. And even there, I need four zeros, whether on one line or two lines. Now it's done. Okay? So the precision uses a cookbook, essentially. If you want to control the number of places, here is, you stick this in up on top, that prepares the computer to understand what this thing and this one and this one do. This one makes no digits, no decimal places after these two values, and this one will round off this one, the next one that it comes across, to be one place. Okay? Now, there are clearly a lot of improvements I can make on this program. Lots and lots and lots of them. Among other things, maybe we shouldn't have to read in the today's date each and every time. Okay? That's certainly a pain to do that. I can make my work much easier if I put in those numbers once and then just put in two numbers for each person. That's one change we can make. Another change deals with the fact that this looks somewhat sloppy, because if someone reads this, although I explain to you while what the purpose of this is and why it's hit twice, it's still sort of messy on the screen. Furthermore, let's say you wanted to translate this program into French. Okay? You would have to come back into this program and change these lines as well as these lines, which are really identical. Maybe we should teach the computer once what to do, and then once we teach the computer what to do, we won't have to repeat that twice. And so if someone wants to change it into French, they change it once, and then they don't have to go through the whole program. Now, of course, this is a baby program. It's not that big of a deal. But if there were thousands of lines there, you don't want to have to look for each time we did something like this and make the changes. So that's another improvement that we might want to do. Eventually, if we were really sophisticated, which we're not yet, we might not want to ask the computer for we might not want to have us put in this number at all, because the computer can get it directly, because it knows what today's date is. It's got a calendar built in. But that's too sophisticated for us right now. In any event, there are improvements that we can make to this program, which we will eventually do. But first we've got to make sure that we understand this program. Okay? And one of the things you need to go home is to write these numbers down, and then you make believe you're the Martian and put your finger, okay, and put the numbers in as you read this. Not the flow chart, but these numbers, so that you understand how this occurs. Follow this through. It's called tracing a program. When you manually, by hand, one finger here and one finger here, playing very dumb, playing like the Martian, doing exactly what it says you to do. This is when one time, when you trace a program, you don't want to be smart. You want to play being stupid. You want to play being 3-year-old or being a Martian. You want to follow exactly what the, not what you think the program says, because that's probably the mistake. You want to follow exactly what the program says and see if it gives you the results that you need. Tracing a program, very, very important. We'll be doing a lot of that. Now, over the weekend, I want you to do that, but I also want you to start thinking about the first programming assignment. Now, I'm going to want to improve this version, so by the time you actually turn this in 2 weeks from today, you will give me an improved version of this program. But for now, you certainly can start thinking about this program at the same time as you read this assignment. And those of you who are reading the book does not follow exactly the order that I'm doing in class, so it may not be exactly helpful to you. Now, a little background scientific knowledge. I don't know how many of you have taken physics classes yet. How many people have taken physics class? Not everybody? Okay. Nevertheless, so we know that once upon a time in the 1600s, Newton was sitting under a tree. An apple supposedly hit him on the head. He began thinking about why he was sitting under a tree, and that led him to conclude that there must be something called gravity. And he began thinking about what happens when you drop balls off an inclined plane and how fast they accelerate and so on and so forth. And he came up with a bunch of equations which you don't really need to derive at this point. You'll certainly do that the first time you take physics class. But there are Newton's laws of motion, which of course account for how we can now use rocket ships to leave the Earth, and why when you drop things out of windows they hit people on the head, you know, all the things that are fun to do, why Letterman can drop, you know, or every once in a while drop containers of milk off the top of a building, or whatever else he throws off the building just because he has nothing else to do. All that has to do with Newton. So Newton has laws of motion, and one of the laws of motion is that the distance traveled by an object moving in a straight line, which is not true for objects that are not moving in a straight line like orbits, but for objects moving in a straight line, such as when you drop something out of a window. So the uniform acceleration, with uniform acceleration, which means you don't hit the accelerator of the car. This also talks about, suppose you put your car in cruise control and you don't speed it up or speed it down. That's called acceleration. So therefore, if you have uniform acceleration, you have that the distance, and the symbol for distance is S, for whatever reason, in Latin. So S is equal to V sub zero, the starting velocity. T is the time it travels, plus 1/2 GT squared, where G is the acceleration due to gravity. And on Earth, that happens to be 9.807 meters per second squared. On the Moon, it would be less. On Jupiter, it would be more. But for Earth, it's 9. So what this basically says, that if I go onto the 10th floor of a building, and I drop a pumpkin out the window, the initial velocity, of course, is zero, because I'm just dropping it. I'm not throwing it. Assuming I just drop a pumpkin, so V sub zero would be zero. And I ask myself, how far will it travel in 3 seconds? So T would be 3. So 0 times 3 is 0. Plus 1/2 times 9.807 times 3 squared, which is 9, That would be the distance that it travels. And if you ask me how fast it was going at the end of those 3 seconds, v, which is the velocity, is equal to v sub 0. Again, in our case, it is 0. Plus gt, which it would be 9.8 times 3. So those are the two formulas. So I want you to write a C++ program that instead of calculating ages, which is rather boring, let's in fact calculate pumpkins being dropped out of windows. Okay? So write a C++ program that calculates the distance and velocity, that is both S and V, that an object travels after being dropped off a very tall building. Now, we will of course neglect the drag due to air friction. Clearly, if we weren't dropping pumpkins, but we were dropping feathers out the window, the feather would take a much longer time to hit the earth because of the air resistance. On the other hand, if you went to the moon and you dropped off a very tall building on the moon, which doesn't exist, but let's say there was a very tall building on the moon, and you dropped a pumpkin or a feather out the window of this very tall building on the moon, they would both hit the ground at the same time. As hard as it is to realize, the feather would, these equations mention nothing at all about mass or any other weight or anything else. All objects, no matter what, if I was to, as you probably know, Galileo did this experiment, but if I was to take a book, a heavy book, and a penny, and drop them on the floor, they would both hit the floor at exactly the same time. So that is true for feathers as well, as the equations clearly indicate, because the equation does not include anything about the object that you're falling. In any event, we're neglecting the drag due to air friction. Even the pumpkin is slowed down somewhat by the fact that there is air, so it will take the pumpkin a few fractions of a second longer to hit the ground than the formula, because there is air over there. But nevertheless, we'll neglect it. Assume the object is dropped with an initial velocity of 0. In other words, we're just letting go. We're not giving it a head start by throwing it harder. And what your program should print a message in the form, when the time is blank seconds, the distance traveled is blank meters, the velocity is blank meters per second, and you're going to write this program, and you're going to provide it data 1, 2, 4, 5, 10. You're going to give it 5 sets of numbers, which of course you will verify on a calculator to make sure that your program gives the right answers, because remember that a program that gives the wrong answers is worthless. And of course, you'll need a trailer at the end to signal when you have no more data. What kind of trailer might you use? What kind of value might you put at the end? I wouldn't put 0, because the 0 is a valid number. You could ask what is the velocity after 0 seconds. The velocity should be 0. Use a negative number. People sometimes use negative 999. You can have negative velocity, but you can't have negative time. At least not in Newtonian physics. If you were talking about Einsteinian physics that deal with theory of relativity, then these equations, by the way, won't work anyway, because these only work for speeds that are less than the speed of light. Blah, 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 blah for physics. We'll get to that some other time, or you'll have that in your physics class. So in ordinary physics, there is no such thing as negative time. And although in Einstein there might be such a thing called negative time, so that otherwise how else would Captain Kirk be able to go back in time? How would Superman be able to run around Earth the wrong direction and make time go backwards? All these things, if negative time, how do you travel into your past? Half the TV shows in the world would disappear if there wasn't such a thing as negative time. But in any event, be that as it may, there's certainly no negative time in this example, so therefore a negative number would be a good signal. What? No, you want to... Did you calculate for the 0? Did you calculate for the 0 here?
No, in general,
not to stop it. Oh, where V sub 0 is?
No.
Well, which way is gravity speeding you up or slowing you down? But yes, in this case, we'll use, I think we want, the question is how fast it's going, okay? In this case, I think it's a positive number we're expecting. our frame of reference is the Earth looking up and how fast that thing is hitting us in the head. So technically, if you want to put it as a negative number in a report, that it travels negative distance, because you're measuring distance from the top of the building. Down would be negative distance, up would be positive, but from the ground reference point, it's true. All these rules make no difference, because frame of reference makes, in physics, makes no difference. You get the same rule whether you're standing on the ground or you're standing on top of the building, just a sign. But in this case, I think it might make more sense since we're starting from the bottom of the ground. Well, you can have a negative distance if you throw things up in physics, right? So it travels in a different direction. In this case, anyway, I think it makes, either which way, both arguments are correct. In this case, I think it makes sense to use positive acceleration, because gravity does pull you down from your frame of reference on the Earth. If you were on the moon, then you would probably use negative, because you are. And if you were on the moon and Letterman was on a building on the Earth, then you'd probably use acceleration of negative from your perspective on the moon, but he would still use an acceleration of positive because the person was down there on the bottom watching it splatter. In any event, this is neither here nor there. You get the same answer, just negative or positive. So I think here we'll probably want to use, the physics will probably tell us to use a positive value. Now, you know enough to do this assignment right off the bat at this point, because you can really take this program, modify it very slightly to get this to work. Okay? Remember that gravity is a constant. That's not changing. Keep that in mind. Gravity is a constant, so we might want to make a constant when we write our program for that. So you might have a home little on your own between now and Monday, from what you already know, take this assignment and get it to working using this. Don't hand it in yet, because I want to still, over the next few days, take this assignment and improve it. Make it more elegant. You know, you write a term paper. First draft of the term paper, okay, it's good. But we can improve it and improve it and improve it until it's much more elegant. We'll want to do the same thing, but this works. We just saw that this works. Okay? So you can do this, and you might want to play with this over the weekend. Any questions? Well, then have a wonderful weekend.